Well, Jerry, first of all, anyway, you're very welcome to Dingle, and it's great to meet you and your dad-in-law.
Well, we're delighted to be here once again. We've been coming about every year for the last 10 years, and we're very familiar with Dingle and a lot of the local people. We spend a lot of time at the Blaskett Center, so we're glad to be back again.
And, Jerry, congratulations on Mike's book, From the Great Blaskett to America. It's a fabulous read, some wonderful photographs. You were the man that was instrumental in getting Mike to do this book. Why and how and when?
Well, I first met Mike about 25 years ago.
You were his son-in-law, of course.
When I met his daughter.
Yeah.
And she and I fell in love. We got married. And during the course of our family life, I would hear stories of Mike's growing up on the island and his years in Dublin and eventually his emigration to America. And after a time, I realized that his story was worthy of preservation. So Mike and I decided that we would go through the exercise of writing a book. And we started a series of Saturday morning interviews. And I transcribed the interviews and then kind of sorted them to create a coherent storyline. And the result is the book, of which we are so proud.
How long did the whole process take?
Well, it took almost 4 years, really. I started when I was transitioning to retirement, but then I came out of retirement. I took another job, so that kind of postponed things. But now I am semi-retired, so we've finished the project.
In the book, the one thing that struck me about it was a multitude of fabulous photographs going right back to Mike's youth. And it struck me like that how there were so many photographs available from the island when there was no cameras there or such. But the photographs really complimented it, Mike.
Sure. The photographs and the credit for the photographs goes to the Blaskett Island Center. They've got a fabulous library of photographs that were taken by various visitors to the island over a long period of time. And then there are some new photographs that come from the Kearney Family Archive that have not really been publicized at all. A lot of personal photographs of Mike and his family.
And Jerry, for yourself, an outsider coming into the Kearney family and learning all about the history through Mike, what had struck you about it? What amazed you? What's your thoughts now of what you have done with your wife's family?
Well, I always was struck by the unique nature of the island and the small sense of community. Excuse me. I was always struck by the small nature and unique nature of the island. The culture that was unique, the focus on the Irish language, the storytelling, the literature that came from the island. It's really quite a remarkable story. And that seems to me to be the story that has influenced Mike in his life. And Mike has really dedicated himself to preserving the legacy of the island. So I was happy to help him in that effort.
Well, I'm delighted to be turning to Mike. Mike, it's a great honour and a privilege to sit down with you and to speak with you. You're here now in Dingle for the launch of your book.
Yes. Gramila Mahagat. I'm glad it has come to fruition after all those years. People are wondering why I have done all this work on behalf of the island since there's nobody living there. The main reason I believe it should be done is because the island has done such a great work on behalf of the movement and the advancement of the Gaelic language, the culture, the history, and the stories that were told on the island and the way they did it. The island to me, when I was growing up there as a young fella, was a heaven within itself, because we didn't know any better. The people were, they were so understandable. They were able to get along with one another. As you know, there was no courthouse, there was no police officer, there was no store, there was no doctor, there was no priest, there was no nurse. All the children delivered on the island was done through experience. It's amazing.
Well, you have captured it all vividly in the book with Jerry's help, of course. Mike, bring us back and tell us about your family and about how many were in it, and talked about your mom and dad.
Well, my father was in America twice, and evidently America food didn't agree with him. He went back to Ireland the second time. In them days, you could go to America by having £5 in your pocket. There was no paperwork. And he had two brothers in Springfield, Mass. Incidentally, I had more relatives in Springfield than I had back home. And he went back the second time and got married to a Nellie Daly from Coamy Knoll, around Slayhead. And there was 10 of us in the family. One of our youngest brothers, Seamus, died as an infant. And, of course, our other brother, Sean, died at 24 years of age. That was the backbone of the island.
You describe vividly in the book, then, the actual home that you lived in and the floor and how the school was attached. Tell our listeners about your house and about growing up and about the school.
Well, I went to school. It is a history and a joke behind the school, and the island was attached to our home. Incidentally, the land belonged to the school was donated by my grandfather to the parish priest in Ballyferriter. We just learned that recently from the Blasket Island Centre. Yes. And I always used to tell my family in Springfield that I had to walk 3 miles to school and 3 miles home in the evening, just to harden them up. Yeah. But unfortunately, they went in the island. They saw that the school was attached to my home.
So they almost
hung me.
Ten children and your mother and father growing up in an island. How did you manage in relation to food? And of course, the weather dictated your life in a massive way.
Well, I tell you, since you mentioned it, it wasn't easy. We had two cows in the island. We didn't die with hunger. We had plenty to eat. We had fresh fish, the freshest fish anywhere else. We had a farm. We used to grow potatoes and vegetables, etc., etc. We had about 70 or 80 sheep, and they used to kill a sheep now and again. And we had plenty of meat on the island. As I said, we never went hungry. We were good and healthy. We had better be, because we had no doctor and no nurse to take care of us. And once another item on the island is how well the people got along together. There was never a case of misunderstanding, and if there was, it was settled among themselves. They didn't have to go to court, because there was no court.
You had a boss, the Ree.
The Ree was the king of the island, and he was the man in charge. If there was a dispute between a family, he settled it. They shook hands, and that was it. My God. Yeah. My God.
The population when you were a small boy growing up, when you were born, what was the population? What was when it reached its peak, would it have been like?
When I was growing up in the island in the 1920s, 30s, there was about 150 people on the island, men and women. But it was decreasing every year. Unfortunately, it wasn't going up, but it was decreasing every year. The weather was a factor. And unfortunately, as much as I have fought the government, the Irish government about the island, they didn't take care of the people in the island. They didn't do what they should have done for them. I think it was a case of putting them to jail and throwing the keys away.
Yeah. Was Irish the spoken language?
Irish was pure spoken language.
Yeah.
There was no other part of Ireland, I think, and maybe I shouldn't say that, but history repeats itself, that spoke Gaelic as pure as they did in the Blasket Islands.
What about communications, Mike, with the mainland?
That was another disaster. The only communication they had was to light a fire in Dunfin, and the islanders felt that there was something wrong. There was something when my mother even died, because the telephone that the government gave to us was out of order. It was out of order more than it was working. Yeah. It was a disaster.
Yeah. Your mother, and you describe in the book, Lord, I'm missing her, she died a very young woman. Talk to us about your mom's death. It's nice to remember her.
Yes, indeed I do, because she was a lovely singer, a great woman, a great housekeeper. But unfortunately, I guess having a baby every year didn't help her. And she developed some kind of a cancer, stomach cancer. And it was a sad event, dying at 37 years of age with 9 children. What are you going to do then?
But you did something and your sister stepped in. Talk to us about your sister, how she decided as a young girl to take over the running of the family.
My sister Kate, Lord have mercy on her soul. If there was a statue to be erected on the island, I would do so in her honour, because she took over the family and she was only 15 and a half years. She had to stay in from school, finish her education, and she did everything, the washing, the cooking, the knitting, and kept an eye on us. And she did a fantastic, fabulous job. Yeah. Unbelievable. Yeah. I don't know how she did it, but she did it.
Yeah. Wonderful lady, lovely to remember her so vividly in the book and all. The weather had a huge part in your lives. Were winters very tough and were summers idyllic there, Mike? Or is it just a kind of a fairy tale in my mind thinking about what the weather was like there?
The weather was a devil on the island, as they used to say. The weather was a factor. They always were battling the weather. And, of course, they were battling the ocean. I don't know whether I should go back to the death of my brother Sean, that they couldn't even reach the mainland to get a doctor, or a priest. And I was working in Dublin then, and I had a telegram from my sister saying that he had passed away. And there was no way to remove his body from the island. This is something that should not have happened in any country. And I had to get in touch with the lifeboat in Valencia to the post office in Dunquin. And only for the lifeboat from Valencia going in and getting the body to Dingle, and from Dingle to Dunquin to bury, they had to do everything against the hill.
And there was three great men, three friends, three island men brought the coffin, wasn't there, Michael, against all odds, out to the island?
They took it upon themselves. One of them was our cousin, Chuck's relative. They were brave men. They're not living today. And if they were, I'd buy them a drink anywhere.
Yeah, yeah.
Because they had such a heart and a belief. As I said about the island, they knew how to get along together, helping one another. And I wish that would be the case today.
Yeah. Everybody in the island, I presume, Mike, and it comes through in your book, everyone in the island helped everybody else. That was the main focus of your life.
Everybody loved one another, got along very well.
Yeah.
To me, the island people, and I have often said it, they were saintly people, and they did not know it.
Yeah, yeah.
They never owed anybody anything. They never had a fight with anybody. They did things according to the book.
Now, when you mentioned the word book, it brings me right up to, there was three authors came out of the island. Yes. There was three famous people, and you knew them all personally. Talk to me about, and remind our listeners about these three legendary authors from the island.
Well, I knew the whole three of them. Tomás O'Crane, I was at his wake in 1937, before, that's the year I left the island, as a matter of fact. I knew Peg Sayers very well from saying the rosary. The rosary lasted for a whole hour. Would you believe that?
A lot of trimmings.
Oh, a lot of praying. She prayed for everybody in the island. Yeah. She prayed for everybody in Springfield, Massachusetts. She's prayed for everybody in Connecticut. And we had blisters on our knees on the cement floor. We blistered. And my God. And Mirisho Sulemon, of course, was about 15 years older than me. And he ended up in the guards. And there's another thing about the island. The people, a lot of them, they said they're cuckoo. They're different people to us. I mean, they don't want to advance themselves.
But yet, we had four young fellows from the island that ended up in the civic guards, and we had three students on the island that ended up as school teachers. And that's a good average for a place of that statue.
What about, talk to me, Michael, about wakes, weddings, and funerals,
and
traditions.
Some of them lasted all night and all day. Oh, God, the old women used to wear a shawl, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And they had a habit of saying the rosary about three or four times and praying for everybody on the island and praying for every relative.
Yeah.
And, my God, it lasted for a couple of days.
Yeah.
But that's the island.
And funerals took place then on the mainland in Dunquin, isn't that correct?
They had to be buried on the mainland, Dunquin. See, there was no graveyard on the island blessed by the parish priest.
Yeah.
And
what about weddings then, Michael? Where would they take place and how long would they go on for?
Weddings were few and far between on the island, unfortunately.
Yeah.
The girls on the island appeared to me they didn't want to marry an islander, although it ended up in the end that two of them got married to an islander. But it appears that they had a statute of limitation not to marry an islander.
Yeah.
They'd rather to marry somebody from the mainland, you know. And
was religion a big part of the culture in the island? And would priests visit the island, Mike?
Oh, religion was very, very high. They were very religious on the island.
Yeah. Yeah,
everything was saying the rosary and prayer. We had to say the rosary every night.
Yeah.
My God, I said to myself sometimes, will it ever end? But
how difficult then was it for you to leave the island? You left and you went to Dublin and you became a barman and you met your wife, Mary Ward, Lord mercy
now. Mary Ward, the poor woman. I could foresee in the island in my later years there that the island was heading in the wrong direction. The people were getting old and the younger people were leaving. They used to go to Dingle or to mainland to dance halls and movies, and some of them didn't come back. They used to get jobs there. And I decided myself, well, there's nine of us here in the family. I was only the third in my family. And I said, I had no use of love for fishing. I said, I don't want to become a fisherman. It's not my cup of tea. So I decided that I should move and make a move, and I did. And a friend of mine, a school teacher from Carseveen, brought me to Carseveen for some time. And then I went from there to Dublin to become a barman.
And then you met your future wife there then?
I met my future wife, the poor woman, at the dance hall in Parnett Square, Teachers Hall. I'm sure you haven't heard about it.
Indeed, yeah.
A famous Kerry Plea football player used to go there. Paddy Kennedy, Mort Kelly, Bert Garvey.
Yeah.
All them guys, they used to come into the bar to me.
And of course, you knew Dan Quinn, Latimer Sinem, or Dan Kavanagh, Latimer Sinem, who lived in Dunquin, didn't you?
Dan Kavanagh and I were good friends.
Yeah.
Good friends. I stayed with him in Killarney quite a few times, himself and his wife, Nellie.
Well, Dan Kavanagh's granddaughter has just been selected to represent Kerry in the Rose of Tralee, would you believe, as late as last week. A lovely, beautiful-looking girl, so Dan would be happy with that. Then you decided you'd immigrate, and you had people in Springfield, Mass, hadn't you?
I had one, two, three uncles and five aunts in Springfield. As I said before, I had more relatives in Springfield than I had back home.
What year was this, Michael?
1947.
You immigrated.
At that time, the war was over and America opened up. They were short of help after the war and they opened up for immigration.
That was the year that the All-Ireland final was played in the Polo Grounds. So not alone was it a great year for football, but it was a great year from America when Mike Carney landed there.
Oh, thank you very much. Oh, you're really uplifting me. Yes, I remember the All-Ireland, and I don't think it should have been played there.
Yeah.
And I listened to it, unfortunately, on the radio.
Yeah, did you?
That's too bad.
Yeah.
But we can't take care of it now. It's something in the past.
And then who did you land with to Springfield then? Who was there for you?
I was picked up. I sailed to New York on the Queen Mary and I was met by my uncle, Tam, and his daughter, Helen, and I never met any one of them. And, of course, they hadn't met me.
Yeah. Now, I'm going to give you one break for a minute and talk to Jerry here, your son-in-law who wrote the book. Jerry, what a memory this man has. Listen to me, it must have been fabulous for you Saturday after Saturday. You must have some stuff taped and recorded.
It really was an incredible experience for me to listen to Mike, and his memory is so vivid after so many years. And I think it reflects his passion. And he really embraced life and lived it to its fullest in all of its dimensions. And that comes through when you talk with Mike.
Were there tears shed in the interviews and in the work on this book, Jerry?
It was a very emotional experience for Mike. And it was an emotional experience for me, too, because he feels all of these events deeply even today as he approaches the age of 93.
And how important is it now that the book is published and the book is out there? How important is it now looking back?
Well, I think that Mike is really a historical figure in the island's history. And I think he follows on in the tradition of Thomas O'Crihan and Peg Sayers, Maurice O'Sullivan. And this is really the last memoir to be prepared by an islander.
Well, since I've landed here in Banbury's Bed and Breakfast House in Dingle this beautiful morning, there has been a posse of people coming to pay homage to him from all over.
That's right. Well, he's quite a distinguished gentleman. He's been recognized for his contributions to the legacy of the island here in Ireland, but also back home in Springfield, Massachusetts. So he's quite a personality. We're very proud of him.
Yeah, and he's looking at his watch there all the time, because this is in the morning now, and he's a busy man because he must go do more interviews and television work and all. Mike, if I could go back to you, to land in Springfield, Massachusetts, I would always get the impression that it must have been a huge wrench for you to leave your native land and to land over there. And the memories of the Blasket Islands, the memories of home, must have remained very etched in your memory.
Yes, I'll tell you, it's not easy. It's heartbreaking. I cried. And then again, I said, what am I crying for? I'm heading for a better life, for a better job, and more money, which is very important. Yeah. And I had unfortunately left my girlfriend in Dublin, which we were going together, Maureen Ward, for 2 years. I have to tell you how I met her at the teacher's hall. I was introduced to her by Kerryman, who was a school teacher. And he said, here's another Kerryman for you. And you know what she said? The place is infested with them. I suppose he's another teacher. No, he says, he's not. He's a foreman in the bar around the corner, and he's doing a lot better.
So you immigrated in 47. You've been there since. What was life like for you there? You made a lot of friends, and in the book, there's some lovely photographs in the book of you. And there's one lovely photograph of you sitting on the porch of your home reading The Kerryman, because you have just told me you read it every single week, and it keeps you up to touch.
Of course, I do indeed. I have the habit. And I'm sure it's not a habit of getting the Kerryman from my friend Wallace Brick in New York every week.
Yeah.
And I love it, and I read it about 6 or 7 times.
Yeah.
And I keep up on the Irish news. I get the Irish Echo, the Irish and American. I get the Ireland of the Welcomes. I get any book which is directly related to Ireland. Yeah. Keep up on the news and see how the gathering is going.
So, Lord Mercy and your wife, how many family had you? And tell me about your own family now, Michael.
Yes, well, we had 4 children, 3 girls and 1 boy. And I'll tell you, they were brought up according to the book.
Yeah.
They're all here with me today. Unfortunately, she's not here. But I'm sure she's watching us. And she was very patient with me with all the things. I got myself involved in Gaelic football in Springfield. I got involved in the John Boyle O'Reilly Club. I spent endless hours there bringing about the creation of a club, which has now about 800 members and the most active Irish-American club in America. And it's owned by its members.
Yeah. Yeah. What other honours have been bestowed on you? You have been.
Oh my God!
You have been honored in various ways, haven't you?
I have received a Doctor of Celtic Literature 2 years ago, which was a surprise to me. I did not ask for it. It was presented to me here at the Blasket Island Center, my whole family, and it surprised me. What I have done on behalf of the island is something that I thought it should be done. For what they have done again for the movement and the advancement of the Gaelic language as a people, as the history and the literature and the culture. If you are going to lose your culture and your heritage, in my estimation, you might as well lose yourself.
If I could bring you back briefly to the island again, you had one famous visitor, and you were one of the people involved in bringing him out, Eamon de Valera.
Oh, Eamon de Valera, yes. He was a slow mover, and in my estimation, I wrote to the man after my brother's death, and I gave him an explanation of what I thought that should be done, trying to move the islanders. I said, they can't move against the hill anymore. My dear man, I said, they're too old. They can't walk. And they can't call on the telephone because it's out of work every day. They should be moved to the mainland or somewhere where they can see the island and maybe do a little farming and fishing. And that's what happened to them at the end. And I'm very thankful for the government. And I'm even very thankful today for what the government is doing for the island as regards bringing it about to a historical park. Yeah. I hope, is that okay?
No, Mike, as we're finishing up now here, it's 12 o'clock in the morning. Tell us about your day, what's coming up, because you have a packed day in front of you. Oh, give us an idea of what, man, you're 92 years old, you're as fit as a fiddle, as the fella said, you're jumping around the garden. tell us what your day entails now.
My day started this morning and I have an appointment with you, and now we have to go back to the Blasket Island Centre and meet Cole Martin, whom has written a book, Hungry from Home. And then I got to meet Mr. Sheehy, Thomas Marso Sheehy, from Kerry Radio, television.
Television, yeah.
And tonight is our big night.
Yeah.
I better get dressed up for tonight.
Come here, what does it feel like now when you land back in the island and you stand and you're on your own and you look around? Do you hear the voices of those that are past, our visions passing before you? What's it like, Mike?
Well, when I go back now, I'll go back today and I look into the island and bring to me back memories of my youthful days down on the beach playing football. And incidentally, we had no football. Do you know what we used to have? We used to have a sock full of grass. That we couldn't afford a football in them days.
Yeah.
And go up on the hill and we used to snare rabbits at night or go fishing down on the pier and have exercise and understand jumping and pull rope. And, you know, we were very active kids. Yeah. We always believed in that.
Yeah. When was the last, when did the last person leave the Blaskets, Mike?
Oh, 1953, was it?
Yeah.
My memory right, yes. Yeah. They moved them finally, and it took 6 years from the first day I persisted the government to do so. I said, my dear government, I said, this is like locking people up in jail and throwing the keys away. These people can't take care of themselves. I don't think they deserve that.
Yeah. What's the one abiding memory of life and the island that remains with you and will remain with you? What's the one memory, Mike, that you cherish most?
Well, the one memory is their culture, their belief in themselves and believe in what they were doing and their storytelling and their singing and the way they learn how to do things. They learn how to make the naivogue, the canoe. They made the violin.
Yeah, they made it.
Oh yes, made himself.
Yeah,
there were people that I guess they dreamt overnight and what they were going to do the following day,
yeah.
But they did it,
yeah.
And they didn't complain about it.
Any regrets?
And what my regrets now? Well, I have a few, but not too many.
Like Frank Sinatra.
And I'm very thankful again for this son-in-law of mine here, Jerry Hayes, who took it upon himself to get involved with me and my storytelling on the island.
Well, Mike Carney, listen to me, it was an honour and a privilege for me to sit down here with you and to talk to you, and to you brought us back. And listen to me, the best of luck with your lunch. And
if you're talking to any of the Kavanagh family in Killarney, tell them I stayed at their father's house a couple of nights.
I will, of course.
And their mother.
I will, of course.
And I had a couple of drinks there, of course, for sure.
Mike, you're a John B. Keane, the great author, had a great saying. He'd say, and he'd say, if he was here, do you know what he'd say?
Yeah.
He'd say, Mike Carney, you're an officer and a gentleman, a good judge of whiskey, and you're a credit to your county.
Well,
Jerry, the last word to you, the man who put pen to paper and got Mike to write this. Remarkable story. Lovely listening, isn't it?
It certainly is, and Wishy, thank you very much to you. Obviously, you read the book, and you understand it in all of its dimensions, and your questions were terrific. They were really right on point, so thank you very much to you.
Thank you, gentlemen.
I have to say thank you, Wishy, too, for all your dedication to Gaelic football, to the Kerry team, which I have watched win about 25 or 30 All-Irelands in my day, and I hope they're going to come back this year.
Lovely. Last word on Kerry football, of course. Where would we be without it?